Chapter 5. God's Messenger. Behold, a greater than Solomon is here. Jesus. 1901. William Dana Orcutt, John Wilson's protege and successor, and Mrs. Eddy's printer, wrote her in 1901 that he was making a trip to Europe and asked whether she had any business she would like to discuss with him prior to his departure. She answered immediately in the affirmative and asked him to come to Pleasant View at his convenience. Mr. Orcutt was impressed with how little Mrs. Eddy had changed since his first visit to Pleasant View nearly a decade earlier. And he was doubly impressed by the vastness of the project she outlined to him. After discussing his pending trip, she inquired as to the date of his return, considering it thoughtfully for a moment. Then she said, "That will fit in perfectly with my plans. When you return, I shall need your assistance." She told him she was working on a major revision of Science and Health, which would require a resetting of the entire book, with a new problem in typography to solve, because she planned to number the lines. As soon as the plates were completed, Mr. Conant was to begin work on a comprehensive concordance to replace the index. The magnitude of her project astonished the young man. In his reminiscences of Mary Baker Eddy and her books, he reviewed her unparalleled accomplishments up to 1900, and then stated, "When I consider the sum total of her known labors during that period, I cannot avoid asking myself, what other man or woman in all history ever equaled this record? To me, this is an unanswerable challenge. Yet all this was but a prelude to even more astonishing accomplishments still to come." Her project was the most ambitious on his agenda, and he knew nothing of other projects she was working on, including the Mother Church Extension and the gathering of material for her autobiographical Footprints Fadeless. Her students were contemplating the purchase of the 4-story brick Hotel Brookline in August 1901, which stood where the extension now stands. But in September, Mrs. Eddy advised them not to purchase this or any other properties until the church had more funds. Chosen students were collecting material from the past for her autobiographical project. Irving C. Tomlinson had written to Mrs. Eddy's sister-in-law, Mary Ann Baker, and received a lengthy response from her, dated August 20th, 1901, in which she said, "At this time, when so much is being said in public, most appreciatively, of the Reverend Mary Baker G. Eddy, and also somewhat that is untruthful, absurd, and wholly unchristian, I desire to make the following statement. First, I will say that I am not a Christian Scientist. Mrs. Eddy's character is above reproach. No libelous words can touch it. No foe can assail it. Hidden in God, it shall shine, and reflecting Him, its brilliancy will be seen long after she who labors ceases her work for ultimate rest. Her large and extensive work, with her unprecedented following, has called forth malignant utterances, so utterly false they should not go unchallenged." One of the utterly false, malignant utterances had been heard at Tremont Temple on the 1st of August, and most likely caused Mrs. Eddy to collect refuting testimony. This was a lecture by Frederick Peabody, titled, quote, A Complete Exposé of Eddyism, or Christian Science, end quote. But Mrs. Eddy forged ahead, despite such attacks. She had outlined her idea for a concordance to science and health to Albert Conant, who worked out the plan for its production. She also employed Mr. Conant to do this work, but he could not implement his plan until the revision of Science and Health was completed. The last major revision of the textbook had been the 50th edition in 1890. She had sought the assistance of a student on that revision, but his efforts had not been successful, which had caused her to start anew and do all the work herself. This time, however, she had two fine scholarly students to assist her. Though temporarily disenchanted with her leadership in the heat of the Woodbury controversy, William P. McKenzie had come through the ordeal with renewed faith in the leader and became one of her able assistants in this undertaking. The other was her competent, ever faithful Edward A. Kimball. But this project was to begin in the fall. In midsummer, July 10th, Mrs. Eddy wrote a message to Third Church of Chicago, which Mr. Kimball read at their dedication services on Sunday, July 14th. Beloved brethren, may this church find God all instead of part, and reflect His goodness and power. Behold, how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. Mary Baker G. Eddy. The Christian Scientists in Chicago had a remarkable and exemplary sense of unity. But when Mrs. Stetson endeavored to adopt their methods, Mrs. Eddy quickly stopped her. The leader knew that this unity must be mental and spiritual, rather than organizational, in order to endure. For that very reason, she had written a new bylaw the previous winter, which had been published in the Sentinel of March 7th, 1901, as follows. Church Bylaws. This is the denominational rule of Christian Science. Each Church of Christ Scientist shall have its own form of government. No conference of churches shall be held except the annual conference at the Mother Church in Boston in June of each year. Let individual intercourse and fellowship be among the churches, and that love continue whereby the brethren may encourage and strengthen one another. But, as Mrs. Eddy had written to Mr. Kimball, quote, none can see what I see, end quote. Not only did the Chicago students not see what she saw about self-government, they evidently did not even see and surely did not implement what she wrote about it and about no conference of churches. At their dedication services, the following was stated. We return our sincere acknowledgments to the Christian Scientists of Chicago and vicinity, who have furnished the means that has enabled us today to present this building as a proper setting for the teaching of divine science in the measure that it comes to us. The body that has made this aid efficient is the Conference Committee of the Churches of Christ Scientist of Chicago. It is composed of the officers and readers of the various churches and the lecturers resident in the city. its general oversight and guidance exercised in building these churches has been generous, wise, and businesslike. Such actions, though having the outward appearance of success and progress, caused the weak to lean upon the strong, as the leader well knew. Her every action and instruction tended toward self-development, which caused the weak to become strong. This was most obvious in her treatment of Reverend Simonson and his normal class tuition. In August, Reverend and Mrs. Simonson were delighted to receive an invitation to attend the Concord State Fair as Mrs. Eddy's guests. She had purchased 100 tickets, largely for the first members of her church, and invited scientists to attend on Governor's Day, August 28th. The previous day, August 27th, had been designated as Children's Day, when all children were admitted free of charge. An interesting feature of that day was repeated in succeeding years. Mrs. Eddy had given out word that she would provide a pair of shoes to all children who needed them, and a representative of William E. Thompson's shoe store gave out over 200 tickets, each to be redeemed for a pair of shoes. Many scientists are aware of this act of charity on Mrs. Eddy's part, but few are aware of the occurrence in Mr. Thompson's shoe store earlier that year, which induced her to this action. All of the papers reported Mrs. Eddy's appearance at the fair on Wednesday, August 28th. One paragraph from the Boston Globe reported, "It was a great day, but perhaps the man on whom the sun shone with the greatest splendor was Noreen, the high diver, whom Mrs. Eddy came more especially to see. She saw his act last year and was much impressed by it, and she expressed a desire to see it again this year. Her desire was granted, and Noreen was consequently the observed of all observers today as he climbed the dizzy heights of his rude scaffold and plunged into the tank of water 87 feet below." What the Globe reporter did not know about Oscar Noreen was that Mrs. Eddy had invited him to come to see her at Pleasant View following his performance, which she watched with interest. The interest of the crowd was on Mrs. Eddy, as her landau was seen to enter the grounds promptly at 2:45 p.m. Calvin Fry was on the box with the driver, and Judge and Mrs. Ewing were in the carriage with Mrs. Eddy. Following an official welcome, her carriage advanced to a point opposite the high diving scaffold. Noreen quickly appeared, climbed about 10 feet to a springboard, and turned a back somerset into the water. He then kept going higher and higher, diving each time, until finally he reached the topmost point and made his great flight through the air, graceful and steady, into the tank with a loud splash. Immediately, Mrs. Eddy's carriage turned about and departed slowly as she waved to the thousands who were waving to her. The reporter described her attire, said she, quote, "looked well and cheerful," end quote, and added, quote, "from the press stand, she appeared to be in good spirits, although she did not manifest any particular enthusiasm in what she saw," end quote. Perhaps she was contemplating what she had perceived about Mr. Oscar Noreen. Both Clara Shannon and Mrs. Ewing have passed on records of Mr. Noreen's visit at Pleasant View. Mrs. Eddy first questioned him about his diving and then talked to him in a, quote, heavenly way for some time, end quote, according to Clara Shannon, until, quote, one could see by the expression of his face how enlightened he was, end quote. Then Mrs. Eddy said, you are able to dive because you have overcome fear. He said, yes, he had no fear whatever. He had practiced for a long time, taking a higher and higher dive, till he could do it without fear. Then Mrs. Eddy said, use that overcoming of fear on your eyes. The man had dark glasses on and said, well, I damaged one eye so that the eyeball had to be taken out. And this is why I wear the glasses, because the eye is unpleasant to look at. They were sitting in the library at the time of this interview, and Clara Shannon said, as she talked to him, I could see and feel that his fear was removed, and his thought was full of hope and joy, although he did not even realize the blessing he had received. The cabman who drove Mr. Noreen to the station told them a day or two later that Mr. Noreen had taken off his dark glasses when he got to the station and that he had two perfect eyes. The missing eye had been restored. That is what Mrs. Eddy had been doing while others were enjoying the diversions of the fair. On Thursday, August 29th, Reverend and Mrs. Simonson visited Mrs. Eddy at Pleasant View at her invitation. It was the first time they had met the leader, and Reverend Simonson said of the occasion, I was most singularly impressed with the purity and beauty of her countenance. But to me, the most striking attraction was her wonderful eyes, the like of which I have never seen in all my experience of contact with people. They expressed volumes. It is beyond my power to describe how they responded to and in various ways portrayed the sacred subject she would at the moment be discussing. You realized that she reflected the Christ mind so fully that she discerned without effort your mental state, but it did not disturb you. The sense that came to you was her desire not to injure, but to help and save. Following this visit, the leader had both Mr. and Mrs. Simonson elected first members of her church, and during the visit, she gave them wonderfully helpful instruction, never to be forgotten. She also showed them many of the treasured gifts from her students, including paintings hanging on the walls. As they stood admiring her banner, which is a life-size painting of the Good Shepherd with his flock, the leader said, see how perfectly happy and contented they all seem. No crowding or pushing for place or position. They are all glad and willing to leave their future in the hands of their shepherd. She told the Simonsons that she prized Britton Riviere's steel etchings of Daniel in the Lion's Den very highly. They were all looking at Daniel in the Lion's Den on her wall, and Reverend Simonson recalled, As we stood before this most interesting picture, she gave us a very entertaining and instructive explanation, not only of Daniel, but of the seven lions. Then she went on and told us that when error seemed to press her exceptionally hard, she would leave her work for a few minutes and come and stand before this picture and study anew the calm and loving manner in which Daniel looked steadfastly to God and God only. He paid no heed to the lions or seeming danger, letting his dear Heavenly Father care for the ferocious beasts and keep them at a safe distance. With new and fresh courage, she said, she would return to her work with a heart full of joy and gratitude for his protecting care. Before this visit with the leader, Reverend Simonson had wondered at the devotion of her faithful followers. But it was clear to him, after he had come in contact with this great heart of love. From that time, he never ceased giving thanks for this Christly leader and her marvelous mission. He wrote in his book, From the Methodist Pulpit into Christian Science, I know of no words adequate to express fully my gratitude to God for this noble and wonderful woman who was good enough, pure enough, unselfish enough, and intelligent enough to receive this revelation of divine science and to record it in such language as to make plain to the benighted understanding of mankind the way of God's full salvation through Christ.